live from the Skyline Studios, high above Columbus and Wacker Drive. It's me, Anna D, Anna DeVlantis. Hope you're having a good Monday so far. I want to get up to what's coming up on the show, and then we must get to the Queen's statement on Megxit. Meghan and Harry's.
Megxit, I like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's just sticking for me. Do you have it in front of you right there, Steve Bertrand, the official
statement?
Official statement from the Queen.
Let me see, I did.
From earlier today, because I got to tell you, this is my read on the whole thing. I feel like it's sort of like she's saying, I'm very fine, I'm supportive, it's all okay, and they got everything they wanted, and it just seems very passive-aggressive family to me. Like, how could this all be fine? They've got one foot in and one foot out. They're keeping their titles, right? But they want the kind of become financially independent, but they're not really.
I'm very confused about this financially independent. Aren't they already financially independent in the sense that Harry has millions of dollars from his mom's estate and she has millions of dollars from acting on Suits?
Seems like they've got enough there of a nest egg.
I would just like $1 million. I would be financially independent if I had $1 million.
So I guess they got money from Princess Di. He did an inheritance from the Queen Mom, that he gets a regular salary from the Duchy, what is that called? The Duchy of, I can't remember what it's the basically Prince Charles fund that generates money for all the royal family members every year. So they get that as well on an annual basis. But here's the deal. They just redid their Frogmore Cottage where they live at the cost of $3 million of taxpayer expense. So now you want to be financially independent?
And you want to leave?
No, but you're going to stay there part-time.
Oh, part-time. Oh.
So the whole thing, I'm just not sure. Everything seems very proper and polite, and the statement was very nice. I don't understand how
family
that all
drama
works.
Even when you're royal,
there's part of me that gets it because he's the spare, what did they call him, the spare
heir and a spare, did they say that horrible thing?
So his whole life he's this runner-up, so why do they really need him there? But at the same time, his whole life he's been groomed for this. So Meghan, as his wife, a part of me feels like even though you're horribly miserable or whatever's going on, wouldn't you just support your husband for just a little bit? Like, not rock the boat for a little bit?
Well, that's the thing. So when did this all start, I think? Did you see the video that emerged over the weekend? There's a video that came out that was shot on the red carpet for the Lion King premiere, where Harry approaches the Disney CEO, Bob Iger, and basically asks for a job for his wife. And this was last summer. Did you see that, Steve? It was like last summer. He went up to him, Bob Iger, and he said, this is Prince Harry, and he said, hey, you know, my wife does voiceovers. And he's like, oh, yeah. And he's like, no, you're laughing. It seems like you're taking that as a joke. No, no, she really does. Like,
I didn't see that story.
So the whole thing about that strikes me is that as a royal, you're not really allowed to work in Hollywood, are you? You're not really allowed to take those types of responsibilities when you're an official royal. So it seems almost like back then, summertime of last year, they were already kind of planning this whole thing. The announcement just was made, by the way, last week that she was going to do voiceover for Disney.
I may be totally wrong. Maybe this was Harry's idea. Maybe she's taking the fall, and this has all been Harry's idea since a year ago.
Well, it seems like no matter what over there, they're going to blame her because they've just been brutal to her, you know, tabloids but other people as well. And I don't really get why, but
they're brutal to everybody. It sells them. Kate was called Weighty Katie as she was waiting for Prince William to, you know, propose to her. There's so much there. I just look at that statement. I'm like, it's so proper and so perfect. And it sounds like, yes, we have more to work out, but that we're fine with it. And I just thought, can they really be fine with it?
Should I do it in my queen's voice?
Yes, let's hear. Please. Today, you watch The Crown.
Today, my family had very constructive discussions on the future of my grandson and his family. My family and I are entirely supportive of Harry and Morgan's desire, Meghan's desire.
Oh, I hope it didn't say Morgan. What's her name?
To create a new life as a young family, although we would have preferred them to remain full-time working members of the royal family.
Okay.
We respect and understand their wish to live a more independent life as a family while remaining a valued part of my family. Harry and Meghan have made clear that they do not want to be reliant on public funds in their new lives. It has therefore been agreed upon that there will be a period of transition in which the Sussexes will spend time in Canada and the UK. There are complex matters for my family to resolve, and there is some more work to be done, but I've asked that the final decisions be reached in the coming days.
It just sounds like one foot in, one foot out. How does this work? I don't get it. And then the other thing was that apparently they were prepared to talk to Oprah about their new life, and that was sort of something that was mentioned to the Queen. I don't know. We have a local royal watcher on the show. She follows all things royal. She's a Chicagoan, but she's from England. And, you know, she's actually not happy with us. I wonder if she represents the British public in that they see this as sort of an affront to them. Like, you know, why did you marry into this family if this is what you wanted? Or maybe it's Harry's wishes. I don't know. It just seems like it's rather messy.
I'm reading on one site that her son's, Princess Diana's sons, when they turned 30, each of them inherited roughly around $16 million. So they do have money.
Yeah, we're not worried about that piece of it. So then how do you work toward financial independence?
I guess they
if
just,
you already have that.
If they're not taking taxpayer dollars in any way,
which they're not,
then
now,
taxpayers don't have the right to say, hey, but you're not doing your royal duties.
Right. Or
that's
quote,
the whole point.
Annual salary from those funds, which, hey, I get it. It's kind of the whole idea of women don't marry men for their money necessarily anymore. Or,
she brought plenty of money
right.
to the table.
So think about one thing. She probably does get criticized saying, oh, you probably just wanted to marry him because he's a royal and you give him. And it's like, you know what? Screw you. I'm going to show you I'm a strong, independent woman and we are a strong, independent little family and we don't need you guys.
I wish Lauren remembered the royal family. This would be just fabulous.
Basically, they're just saying, we don't need all of you.
Yes.
We don't need you butting into our business. And by the way, the paparazzi
except
killed my mother.
Except we still want to live in the house. But we still want to live in the house and we still want some of it. Okay, we're going to break down all of this coming up. Also, those storms this weekend that really kicked up the waves. Lake Michigan, you've seen the beach erosion. You've seen all the city paths and the bike paths got hit. It was pretty rough this weekend. Record lake levels, of course. It's a story we've been talking about for some time. But one alderman has a plan to totally redo Lakeshore Drive. Alderman Brian Hopkins will be here. He'll talk about it, tell us how it's just sort of a Band-Aid what they have out there right now. It's not enough. It's not going to last.
I'm so sorry. I know you're talking about the beach erosion.
What
the
are you
waves,
thinking?
But have you seen all the memes comparing Meghan to Yoko Ono?
Oh, no.
It's all over on Instagram and Facebook, and they transpose Yoko Ono's face on Meghan's. Anyway,
we've got to get to that trending topics because this is a story that's got a lot of legs. Also, Illinois Politico reporter Shia Kappas is here. She's going to talk about all the drama here in state government, city government. A lot going on. We've got self-funded candidates to talk about. The mayor, she officiated a wedding as well. Over the weekend. How about that?
I wonder.
Mayor Lightfoot. More on that. That's a tease, so I can't tell you anymore. It's Money Monday. Ray Kaplan, David Hochberg, they're going to be here with your money questions. They've got some ideas about dealing with debt, but also, did you see Congress pass some laws about retirement savings, hopefully making it easier for people? Because it feels as if there used to be pensions. They used to be much more prevalent. Now you see public pensions, but private sector, it's really hard to come by a pension these days. So it's on you saving for your retirement, putting that together. And it just seems like we're not nearly saving enough.
People aren't saving. And they're also using their 401k as a way to
pay off
savings.
Student debt sometimes even.
And so credit card debt and taking loans from the 401k.
Vicious circle, that's for sure. So they're going to tell us some ideas about how to prioritize that in your life. And as I said, local royal watcher Pauline will be here to describe her feelings about the Queen's statement and the whole Meghan and Harry thing. That is coming up here on the show from the Skyline Studios here on WGN. It's 1:14. Back with more. Our guest here in studio, Politico's Shia Kappas. If you don't already read her Illinois Politico rundown, it is the rundown in politics to learn about everything going on in the city, the state. You have so many interesting nuggets, but then you also just get a really quick digest. Boom, boom, boom. What's going on? So how do people subscribe? Let's tell people if they're not already, they should be.
Probably the easiest way is to Google my name, Shia Kappas at Politico, S-H-I-A-K-A-P-O-S, and you'll see the Politico, my newsletter will come up, and then there's a little box right there. You put in your email. It's free. It's really easy. It comes every day, so you got to love it.
Yes, I do love it, but they never delete it. I go in there, I feel like I'm very informed when I read part of what you have to say. But then there's also these interesting talkers, such as self-funding candidates. You've got everyone from Bloomberg spending money in Illinois, real money, vowing to spend $1 billion to get elected.
Right.
Serious stuff. And then you go down to some of the local offices. We, of course, know Rauner and J.B. Pritzker. Self-funded. Now you've got the state's attorney, Bill Conway, and several others as well.
It was an interesting story to report because you realize a lot might be too big, but there are a fair number of judges who do this because they are not allowed to ask for money. and they're not allowed to, you know, go out there and try to round money up, so they give money to themselves. Mm-hmm. And they do that because it's like a really great investment. If you are a judge, you're probably earning $200,000 a year for life.
In Cook County?
Statewide.
Statewide.
You name it. So you figure, I'm going to spend $100,000 and be a judge for life, because they don't have to quit until they die, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, everybody gets to call you Your Honor.
Your Honor. Wouldn't that be a big ego boost every day? Your Honor, welcome. I guess the pro here is that if you don't go reaching out to get a bunch of donors, you're not going to be sort of corrupted by the money in the system. The con here is with self-funded candidates, it's hard for others to get a leg up when somebody should just self-fund to the tune of millions and millions of dollars in races that didn't used to really, you didn't really need that kind of money, I don't think, to run for state's attorney.
Right.
Did you need $3.2 million?
Sure. No. But I think there are a fair number of political experts out there who will tell you, and who told me, that if you don't have a good message, if you don't know what you're doing, all the money in the world is not going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have to have both. You have to have a good message, a good political campaign, and then know how to spend your money wisely. A lot of people spend a lot of money willy-nilly, and it doesn't go to the right aspects of their political
because
campaign.
They tend to be more inexperienced in the way of elections,
right,
and running for office and that kind of thing.
Right.
I guess sometimes it could work against you if people just think you're buying a campaign, or you feel as if you're buying an office.
Well,
that might rub people the wrong way, although I haven't seen a ton of instances of that.
I think people are becoming more used to it, you know, Donald Trump included. You know, mm-hmm. people have this idea that if they made a lot of money in the business world, that they must be good at...
That must translate to the political world. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, frankly.
Right.
And we've seen both of those things happen. More is coming out about that email, that one email written by Mike McLean, the ComEd lobbyist, very close to Speaker Madigan for half a century. Really hard to untie the two. Not that Mike Madigan wrote the email. He didn't. He says he knows nothing about this email. The email references a loyal state employee who should be rewarded for covering up ghost payrolling and rape. And it's just opened. It's just mind-boggling, because there are sent shockwaves, I think is fair, through Springfield. And now it's like, what happens now? Let's make sure this is really checked out.
Now we're finding out. When we first heard about this last week, everybody, you know, immediately went to Me Too. It must have been a woman. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. How could this happen? We hope this victim comes forward. And now we're understanding, based on a Tribune story today, that it most likely has to do with an inmate who was released early from prison and then raped a child. And was during the Quinn administration. And McLean seems to have written this email suggesting that, hey, this guy was there for you, trying to keep this hush-hush because you don't want this out there, when you were letting lots of inmates out early. So now we're kind of dialing it back. Maybe instead of looking so closely at what Mike Madigan knew or didn't know at the time, now we might be wondering what the Quinn administration knew or didn't know at the time.
Still covering up something like that is even worse than we thought. If you think it's a child molester and getting out sooner, and we're keeping that quiet. I mean, should we keep that quiet? Is that something?
Not.
No, of course not. That seems like the kind of thing that should be very much public. But I also think it's interesting that Speaker Madigan has been asked if he's going to have a House committee to convene on this, to look into it from that perspective, and he's pretty much given a flat no.
Right. He's, I think, said that it needs to be left to the proper authorities to investigate, whatever
mm-hmm.
that means. So.
Criminal investigations. And the governor says he's taking it seriously. He certainly seems...
Yes. And then one of the southern counties is starting an investigation on it as well. So... hopefully we'll have something uncovered about what it all means.
Yeah, hopefully soon. I think that seems like a thing that we should keep a light on, because it certainly is something that might, we want to know the results of all of that.
Absolutely.
This is an interesting nugget you had today. Mayor Lori Lightfoot officiated her first wedding over the weekend. Tell us the circumstances there. It was at City Hall.
It was at City Hall. She doesn't do weddings. She doesn't want to be in the business of doing weddings, but she happened to have this free morning. She apparently has a mutual friend with this couple. political consulting firm owned by Lori Glenn, and these guys know Lori and were getting married, and I guess it was all set up, and they went there in the morning, and there were flowers. You know, it was a crummy day, Saturday, so it was kind of a festive, short, sweet little moment. She oversaw the wedding there.
She must have been close to them then, if she wants to make sure that she's not really in the business of doing this, but that this was a special moment.
I think it was a special moment. I don't think she's that close to them. I think she was close to Lori, and Lori arranged it. That's what I'm saying. I think just an out of the blue, and she said, sure, why not? And so...
So there you have it. Yes. It just kind of happened that way.
Yes.
You also talk about developers are giving opportunity zones a try, and you separate this from opportunity zones in the past. It feels as if in the past sometimes we've had big buildings that have been built and received some sort of taxpayer funding or some sort of grant money that maybe didn't necessarily deserve it, but that these opportunity zones that we're seeing now in the city are truly areas in need of development, in need of people moving in to do something.
Yes, that's a good WBEZ story, and that's one of those I aggregate, Anna, so I can't really talk
about it. No, but I think the fascinating thing is what you mentioned is that we're so accustomed to being, you know, seeing that these kinds of things don't always look the way they are.
Right.
And in
right.
this case, it does seem as if dollars are flowing, federal money is flowing toward development projects in areas that are really desperate in need of the help,
and
the money.
And that's what Lori Lightfoot has been pushing for, too. So I can understand why that is becoming a bigger thing in Chicago.
Yeah. And then finally, you've got the Deadspin moving to Chicago. I thought that Deadspin was closing.
Well, they closed in New York,
Isn't it a sports site?
Yeah, that now they're going to start up here. They think that they can make it here.
Very cool.
We're a good media town, so why not?
Why not? What a good spot for them to relocate. They're going to be in the offices of The Onion. So that would be cool.
That's a good fit, right?
And then happy birthday to Nate Silver, who is, I didn't realize, was a Chicagoan originally. He runs that 538
Stats. Yeah, I don't know that he grew up here, but he went to college here, and then he started as a sports stats guy for a website, lived in Wicker Park.
How'd that work out for him?
Yeah.
Pretty well.
Well, and while he was doing that, he, on the side, did this political analysis and then became, you know, was identified as a whiz because he called, you know, the victory of Barack Obama at some point.
He's made several predictions,
yes.
And his data has proven right, and then not so right in the last election, but no one really was all that
last time
around. Shia Kappas, thanks for visiting us. We always like seeing you and learning what's in your rundown for the day. The Illinois Politico Playbook is what you need to get, and get it in your inbox every day. Thanks, Shia.
Thank you.
Back with more here coming up, including Alderman Brian Hopkins will tell us why there needs to be a major redo on Lakeshore Drive. Anna DeVlantis back here in the Skyline Studios, 131. Alderman, Second Ward Alderman Brian Hopkins has stepped into the studio. How you doing, Alderman?
Good, Anna.
Nice to see you, too. So we were talking about lake erosion. We were talking about the waves kicking up 20 feet this weekend. People, another powerful visual just reminding us, Lakeshore Drive, those bike paths, the walking paths, it's all, something's got to be done out there. So I want to get to your plan and your ideas, but we got to ask you about the coyote first.
Because that was over
in your ward.
Yes.
And I know that seemed like it was done. Did we finally connect that coyote to the DNA, and do we have the right coyote?
Yeah, we think we do, although there's a possibility we don't. The DNA evidence is still at the lab for testing. It's a, you know, rather time-consuming process that they have to go through, follow all their steps, especially when the stakes are high as they are, because we do believe that it is the same coyote that was responsible for the attack on the 6-year-old child, the 32-year-old male in Streeterville, and a number of other reports of an aggressive coyote behaving strangely. It is the same coyote. Whether it's the one we captured or not, we can't say with 100% certainty. But the fact that this coyote launched what is described as a predatory attack on the 6-year-old child, this is a dangerous animal. There's no question about it. This animal is a threat to human beings. It's a very rare set of circumstances when a coyote can be tagged with that label, but there's no doubt this animal needs to be captured and removed. If we don't have it in custody already, we need to be out there looking for the actual coyote. But since the reports over the last couple of days of aggressive behavior have subsided, that further adds weight to the belief that the one that's being held in the rehab center is, in fact, the one that attacked the child.
I was going to say, I did see the sightings went down, but there was also a fox sighting over the weekend. Is that true or false, that there was really a fox?
A fox?
Did you see that?
I didn't see that.
Yeah, there were jokes going around saying, you know, does he know that this is coyote country right now?
It's probably pretty dangerous for a fox, I would think.
It is. Foxes are natural prey of coyotes, and they're rivals, so they tend to not have overlapping territories to the extent where they're, you know, hunting in the same area at the same time.
So we were mentioning before that coyotes, we see them in the city, we see them in the suburbs, you see them in the outlying areas. The fact, and you must get calls from the people who live in your area in the second ward about coyotes. This one different because it was biting people, because it was attacking people, and that created the whole priority to try to go after it.
Well, I sponsored the first coyote management ordinance in city council history. Ooh. I did that 5 years ago, and part of the reason I did it was because we're overwhelmed by 911 calls from people who just say, I see a coyote, you know, and they want an immediate response. They want us to mobilize the forces and run like crazy because we see a coyote. And we needed a policy in place to be able to say, you know what? We don't respond to these calls because 99.9% of them amount to nothing. It's just a coyote being a coyote, eating rats, minding its own business. We don't have to mobilize the troops, except in rare circumstances. And we actually did put that language in the ordinance, too. And I remember the discussion from the wildlife biologists who supported this ordinance. They kept saying, you know, you're probably never going to have to invoke that clause that we put in there authorizing the city to use lethal means if there's a dangerous coyote. Well, here we are. We actually do have to invoke that clause, and it's a set of circumstances that really doesn't happen very often at all.
So don't call 911. Call 311 or don't
call
anyone.
You know, I've been saying for years now, don't call 911, and now I'm contradicting myself because we are still looking for that one coyote just in case the one we have isn't it. So we're telling everyone, if you see a coyote that appears to be behaving unusually, if it's limping, especially if it seems to have an injury, if it's acting in a manner that suggests it's not afraid of people, or if it's approaching people and pets, we actually want you to call 911. And then after we get that coyote taken care of, we're going to go back to the other advice, which is leave us alone, leave 911 alone, and leave the coyotes alone. So I look forward to being able to return to that.
I do too. I think that would be very nice for everyone involved. All right, we got to get back to the waves this weekend. If anyone saw any of the video or you're out driving along Lakeshore Drive and you're able to witness it, those waves were kicking up. It was huge. They were hitting the bike path. They shut down some of the bike paths and walking paths along Lakeshore Drive. And then far north, which is not your ward, I know, far north in East Rogers Park, the water was coming clear up to people's doorsteps there. Those beaches totally gone on the north side.
The south side took the worst hit. Around 71st, 75th, they took a very severe hit. And you mentioned, Anna, the 20-foot waves. That was actually rare. There were very few instances where the waves got to 20 feet. But it isn't really the height of the wave that is the threat. It's the sequence of the waves and the speed of the waves. These waves were coming in very short succession, one, two, three, four, one after another. And they were moving at a great speed. So that is a tremendous amount of force. It was breaking down the barriers in many cases, damaging the concrete jersey walls that we put up to try and protect Lakeshore Drive. And the force of this water was just ferocious. It caused a lot of damage, tore up asphalt, actually relatively new asphalt that had just been paved.
Yeah, it looked like pebbles if they were times 10 in size. I couldn't believe how easily it cracked that up.
Yeah, it just crushed that asphalt like it was crumbling a cookie. Mm-hmm. So these were extraordinarily powerful forces at play.
So we've got some sort of temporary barriers there helping, but that's not enough, is it?
Well, the barriers are helping and hurting at the same time. You know, if you look at the damage to Lakeshore Drive itself was minimized. Part of the reason is because the barriers did their job to contain the force of the waves further towards the shore. So what happens is all that energy and all that power is concentrated. Rather than letting it dissipate over Lakeshore Drive, we concentrated it on the beaches, and that actually caused more damage and more erosion to the beaches. So we protected Lakeshore Drive, but at a price of additional damage to the trail and the beaches.
You know, over the years, there have been so many plans put forth about Lakeshore Drive. People want to straighten the S-curve. People want to fill in and make more park space. They want more landfill east for more activities for people. it's one of the beautiful, truly beautiful places of our city. We love that it's public and that is an area that belongs to everybody, and you drive along it. I think the people who take that as a commuter path would be pretty upset if it were reduced in any way in terms of the traffic and amount it is allowed to, you know, transport. What would be your plan to deal with this? Because I know you've thought a lot about Lakeshore Drive dealing with this, the rising lake levels, and this problem we're talking about.
Yeah, I've been on the Lakeshore Improvement Committee for 15 years, predating my time as alderman. I'm still a believer in the overall plan that was unveiled all those years ago. A big feature of it involves adding lake fill into the lake to create additional land. And we recently did that at Fullerton. We added about 3.5 acres of land at Fullerton, near the theater on the lake. And it's interesting, that historic structure sustained no damage during this weekend, partially because it had that additional 3 acres of land to serve as a buffer to allow the waves to spill up on the shore and naturally dissipate. Just a little bit further south at Oak Street, where we have the former Oak Street Bistro, which is scheduled to open next year as a new restaurant, that's sustained a significant amount of damage because we have the traditional shoreline in the exact same spot that it's always been. So the waves were able to spill over that shoreline, and it just reduced some of the wooden structure to toothpicks.
So what the solution you would say would be, more landfill?
Absolutely. Our plan calls for 60 acres of additional landfill, largely between North Avenue and Navy Pier on the south. But that's where most of the erosion is occurring. That's where the lake at its current level is closest to Lakeshore Drive. And that's where a lot of the asphalt damage that we saw over the weekend occurred.
What are you hearing from residents? A weekend like this, when we had some storms and there was some activity, I know they did have some bike paths and closed, some areas were closed. Probably too dangerous to be there, and it was pretty obvious, I think, if you were anywhere near it, that you probably wouldn't want to go on those paths.
Yeah,
but what
it was. Well, fortunately, there were no injuries. There were no fatalities. There were still people on the lakefront taking unnecessary risks. We announced the trail was closed. We put up barricades. People moved them. Adventurous types wanted to get out there and get a
surfers?
Selfie. We didn't see
any surfers. Please tell us no.
Yeah, we didn't see anybody on wakeboards or surfboards, but we did see people dangerously close to the lake, ignoring the repeated warnings that we'd sent out, ignoring the trail closed signs. I had my staff out there locking the underpasses that provide pedestrian access to the lakefront in my ward, trying to keep people away. We actually have to find a better method to tell people when the trail is closed and the lakefront is closed, we mean it. Don't do it. Because if you fall in the lake, our first responders are going to risk their lives to rescue you, and that is irresponsible, and it shouldn't happen. So people need to take these warnings more seriously.
It's so true. If you saw the activity in the water this weekend, just even the video that was on the news stations.
Well, and what it did to the asphalt,
crazy.
That will be your head. Don't risk it. It's not even close to worth it. That's terrifying.
And you raise a good point, Lauren. We can't repair the trail right now because the asphalt plants have all closed for the winter. So a lot of the damage that has occurred on the lakefront trail, it's currently roped off, and we haven't quite figured out how we're going to accommodate the need for people still wanting to run, work out, ride their bike in the winter. There's chunks of the trail we're simply not going to be able to repair until the weather warms up in May.
We don't have much more time here, Alderman, but I want to ask you about one more thing here, something coming up for City Council to consider. Now the recreational marijuana is here, and Mayor Lightfoot said that there's an urgent need to find spots for people to be able to smoke marijuana legally. Where should it be? What should you do? This is what council's about. You're considering it right now.
Yeah, the proposal is to allow tobacco shops and hookah lounges, places that exist like that. There's actually 42 of them right now in Chicago. They're not licensed to allow cannabis to be smoked there, but different types of tobacco products are used there, and they have ventilation systems, etc. The problem is we legalize this, and at the same time we say, well, it's legal to own and legal to consume in your home, but if you don't have a home where you can do that, for example, if you're in an apartment or in a condo building where it's banned, you can't smoke it in your vehicle. You can't smoke it on the street. You can't smoke it in a park. You can't smoke it in a bar. Where are you going to be able to smoke this product? So we really haven't answered that question. And this was the mayor's proposal to allow some of these tobacco facilities to smoke. My concern would be that the dispensaries may want to incorporate a smoker's lounge into their operation. And that's a problem for me because some of the dispensaries that have been looking in my ward are not generating the type of opposition that you might expect because we're promising the neighborhood people are just going to buy it there. They're not going to use it there. Once you say, well, they're going to have a lounge and it's going to be a big party, that changes the dynamics and you start to get a lot more localized opposition. So I'm not sure how this is going to play out.
You can't smoke in your car? I didn't know that.
You cannot smoke in your car.
I know you can't be on the city streets. I know that you can't be in public. You can't be in a park or anything like that. But in your car also, not a possibility.
Yeah, similar to alcohol. You can transport it. You need to have it sealed in a container in the trunk of your car, not accessible to the driver. You know,
but
just
if you're
treat
sitting
like
outside with the car off outside your house, still not okay.
You still can't be smoking it in your vehicle because then the assumption is you're going to finish smoking and drive your vehicle, and then you're an impaired driver.
Okay, so the push to try to find a legitimate spot for people to be able to do this. Do you think you'll have some resolution? It sounds like it's where you're working your way through.
Yeah, I temporarily stepped in to chair the committee that heard this last week, and I think the votes may have been there at one point, but we had different aldermen coming and going because there were other meetings going on at the same point in time. So it would have been a roll call. There would have been no votes. I don't know how this plays out. We'll have to see who shows up tomorrow and if the mayor's legislative team is able to put together a roll call vote on it. We'll have to see.
We'll see. All right, Alderman Brian Hopkins, thanks for coming by the studio. We always like seeing you and hearing what's going on in your ward and across the city. So thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Have a good one. We have much more coming up here, including a royal watcher joins the show. She is a Chicagoan, but she's been a royal watcher all her life. She's from England and has very, very disturbing thoughts about what she thinks is happening to the monarchy. She will share them with us coming up here after the break. On the line right now, the Royal Summit is over, and we have a local royal watcher. She's from England initially. Her name's Pauline. And Pauline, you've been following the royal family for a very, very long time. All your life, I would imagine.
That's true, Anna. All my life.
All your life. All right. So now the Queen has had this royal summit. It's over. And she's issued this statement saying that it's all good. We're all good. I'm entirely supportive of Meghan and Harry and their decision to live these independent lives. And we're going to work through some things. There's some complex things down the way, but we're all good with this. And then it seems like the Duke and Duchess of Sussex got what they wanted. But it doesn't feel as if everybody's happy about this, and you're in that category, aren't you?
I am in that category, yes. I've never been a fan of Meghan, and I think she was caught up in the excitement and the fact that this is the royal family, and it hasn't worked out for her. She seems absolutely miserable, and I think that's what the summit was all about. And I did watch it this morning on BBC America, and the Queen really wants them to remain part of the royal family, but she's understanding about Meghan. But what concerns me, and it really bothers me, is the rift now between William and Harry. And there was an article in the paper when I was home in the summer that said, you know, William himself was saying, I've always had my arm around Harry, but I can do it no longer. So the Fab Four are no more.
Well, there was some really negative reporting about the brothers in the press over the last 48 hours, blaming one or the other, or saying William was upset with him. And they came back with a joint statement, I think yesterday, basically saying that don't ever try to divide us. We'll always be there for each other.
We'll always be brothers.
And I hope to God that's the case, and I think it will be. I really believe so. They've been through a lot together as brothers, and this shouldn't wake them up. But I want to ask you about the British sentiment, because I know you go back and forth all the time, even though you're a Chicagoan now. And I wonder, you know, they want to no longer take the taxpayer-funded salaries or the money they get to be royals. But there's still a couple issues there, because they're Frogmore Cottage, where they want to live part-time. They want to live part-time in Canada and part-time at Frogmore. Mm-hmm. That was renovated at the cost of like $3 million, essentially pounds.
Yeah, £5 million, something like that. It was an awful lot of money.
Lot of money from taxpayers.
Yes,
and they still want to live there. And then they have this whole issue of security, which currently costs £1 million or more per year. So who pays for that? And would the taxpayers be okay being on the hook for that if they are not truly senior royals?
Probably not. Lots of complaints. And also they get $2 million a year from the duchy from Cornwall, where Prince Charles has his business. It's mainly flowers, bulbs, honey, that kind of thing. But it brings in a lot of money every year. and they will get, they have been getting $2 million a year from that. And I'm sure that will help tremendously. Plus, you remember that Princess Diana left both the boys a considerable amount of money. But it seems to be, according to the papers at home when I was there, that Meghan wants a business. She has this beauty business, beauty cream or something. She wants to start that. Well, she can't really do that if she's a member of the royal family. They can't have their own businesses. But the Queen apparently today has been very understanding. Meghan was on the phone. She wasn't there with the rest of the family. But she can see that she has a lot ahead of her, the Queen, trying to keep the family together. And also she did mention, and I was surprised about this, they will keep their HRH, his or her Royal Highness, which was removed from Fergie when she was divorced from Andrew many, many years ago. She's just known as the Duchess of York. Mm-hmm. She's not a Royal Highness. But the Queen has said, according to the BBC today, that that is probably going to stay with Harry and Meghan.
It's fascinating to think about the road ahead, how this takes shape, because it does appear, we just heard the announcement that Meghan will do voiceover at Disney, and then there was that video that surfaced about,
for sure,
that was taken on the red carpet, where Harry had gone up to the CEO of Bob Iger of Disney and sort of pushed. And that was last summer. So it made you think, mm-hmm. What you were just talking about, when you're a royal, you can't do those kinds of things.
You're not supposed to have your own business. Maybe she'll do it for free. Who knows?
I think she is.
Somehow
I doubt that. No, I saw the only way
she could get away with it. Yes, sorry.
I saw a release, uh-huh. Pauline. I just want to make sure we're factual on that, because there was a release saying that she was going to give it to a wildlife fund, whatever she earned
from
that.
That's good then.
Then that would be okay, according to royal rules?
That would be okay, according to what's happened in the families before. Yeah. So, but it's very sad, I think, because I do feel... the other thing I heard on the news this morning was that it's 98% Meghan that does not want to stay in this position that she's in now. And Harry knows that he's never going to be out of the royal family. So I'm sure that they're having lots of tete-a-tetes, shall we say, together, mm-hmm. both of them. Of what are we going to do? How will we survive? Well, they've got money from the duchy. Should Prince Charles continue to give them the money? And, of course, Meghan must have her own money. Harry was left a nice amount of money, as was William from their mother.
Yeah.
So they're surviving. You know, they will survive.
I think financially they'll survive, but what were you going to say?
Oh, yes, of course, yes. But I was just going to say, you know, the taxpayers in England do not like to do this now that there's a sort of a rough road ahead for them. I think there'll be a lot in the newspapers in England of complaints.
That's interesting.
But nobody that I spoke to, nobody, and I think you'll find it in the papers, has ever said anything about who she is and what she is and the color of her skin. Nobody has ever said anything about that. And if it's brought up, then she's done it herself. But no one, and I spoke to lots and lots of people about that, and that has never been a problem in the UK all the years I lived there. It was nationality. None at all.
Yeah.
None.
Initially, she was embraced, and they were embraced as a couple, a modern couple, and it was clear that they never were going to be exactly like William and Kate, and they didn't need to be.
That's right. Didn't need to be. Kate has a different road ahead of her with William.
Sure.
She will be the next queen when William ascends the throne. In fact, there was a lovely photograph today on BBC News of the four monarchs, the Queen, Prince Charles, Prince William, and Prince George.
Yeah.
That was taken together.
Well, we'll see, Pauline, what happens now. We have the press release, and now we'll see how it takes shape.
Yeah, see how it takes shape, Anna. That's right.
Thank you, Pauline. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
I appreciate
you're so welcome.
A conscious,
okay, dear.
Conscious unroiling is the way they described it.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I know. Yes, the unroiling. Well, I'm a royalist to the hilt. I always have been, and I always shall be. So, Yes, I am.
Thank you, Pauline.
Okay, dear.
Have a good evening. Much more to come here on WGN Radio. You know, it's interesting, Lauren. I don't know if you follow this as much. Obviously, Pauline is a
definitely
true
not nearly
royal,
as much
royal
as
watcher. But it's funny how the British public is responding to all this, and maybe eventually it'll kind of work its way out, and everyone will say, okay, yeah, this is okay. This is them, and this is the way they want to live their life. It
naturally,
doesn't seem right now that's the case.
Naturally, I just keep hearing every side. I'm like, oh, okay, I get that. Oh, okay, but I get that too. Yeah, it's an interesting
mm-hmm. We'll see how it shakes out, right? It's one of those things. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Back in the Skyline Studios, 206. This is Anna DeVlantis along with David Hochberg. It's Money Mondays and Ray Kaplan. David Hochberg, you know him, Vice President of Lending, Team Hochberg at Homeside Financial. And Ray Kaplan, she is the Kaplan Law Firm. We know her. We know both of you. Welcome, guys. Nice to see you.
Thank you.
So you also, we should say, host Home Sweet Home Chicago Saturdays at 10 a.m. to noon on WGN Radio, where you answer financial questions and you sort out a lot of people's problems and you save people a ton of money.
10 until noon.
Say that again.
Sorry. I go. 10 until noon. Ray is going to be on not this weekend, but next weekend.
Right, the 25th, I believe.
The 25th. She's going to be a co-host on the 25th.
Very cool. We'll listen to you then. I mean, so much to get to. It's the new year. A lot of people have New Year's resolutions that involve their finances. Plenty of us do. And some of that is trying to get this mounting debt under control. Loan modifications are things that happen all the time, but not everybody falls into the right hands when it comes to doing it. And you've seen plenty of that, haven't you, Ray, with people not finding the right person to handle that?
Oh, absolutely. We were just talking before the break about a few years ago, there were a lot of people out there, attorneys, some of them even, yeah, who were advertising that they would get your loan modification through for you, and then they ended up not doing anything, and it was a big mess. But yeah, in terms of loan modifications, you really do have to be careful who you go to.
How do you be careful? What would you recommend?
Well, if we're talking about...
Are there certain things that are red flags that you would say, okay, that's not the right person when they ask you to do this or they tell you to do that?
You know, I think it depends on the situation. There are certain types of loan consolidations that I'm all for. If you have a lot of credit card debt, there are certain loan consolidation companies. The one that comes to mind for me right now is SoFi, where if you have a ton of credit card debt and the interest is 15% APR, and they're going to refinance it for you and kind of consolidate it so you have one monthly payment at a much lower interest rate, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Okay. I had a lunch with a couple of friends at Italian Village, mm-hmm, and both of them were talking about their student loans, and one is in her 30s, one's in her 40s, and they're still dealing with their student loans, and they tried to get these modifications based on what they were doing. One worked in the nonprofit sector, one is a teacher, and both of them said they had varying degrees of exhaustion and like headaches and problems dealing with trying to loan forgiveness.
Right.
And one of them said that the nonprofits, she works for a nonprofit. That's one of those qualifying names or the qualifying careers.
Right.
She thought she was up for it. The federal program representative, she got on the phone, told her what to do. She followed the steps. And at the end of running through all these hoops, jumping around, she said, they told me, sorry, there's this little loophole here. You don't qualify.
Can I just jump in real quick?
Yes.
I think that's the key. Call into an 800 number, got somebody in a call center that's got maybe 3 hours worth of training.
Right.
Okay. No, and I'm not making it right. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, 1-800 got loans. Okay. You know, student loan, call in. You're talking to somebody that you don't know what the degree of sophistication they have in training when it comes to work around all of the laws that are in effect to protect consumers of student loan.
You would hope they're reading from a script that's been kind of validated.
See,
in order to give people advice. Obviously, that didn't work in her case.
Well, I think here's what the problem is. The Department of Ed hires servicers like Navient or Mohila, and then they train people. And the servicer is hired by the Department of Ed to service the loans. They're not hired by the Department of Ed to analyze your financial situation and to make sure that the law that governs these federal student loans is being applied to you accurately. So you need somebody like me, actually, who understands the
exactly
statute
like you
and the law, so that we can apply the law to you and to your finances. It's all about compliance with the statute. So here's what you need to get public sector loan forgiveness. Three things have to be happening simultaneously for 120 months. You have to have the right type of loan, which is a direct loan, not a FFELP loan. You have to have the right type of job, which is full-time in the public sector, and you have to be in the right type of payment plan for all 120 months. Those things have to be occurring for 120 months. So let's say the friend you were talking to put her loans into forbearance for a few months. She might be eligible for public sector loan forgiveness in a few months. Maybe she was in forbearance for 6 months, and so she's not eligible for public sector loan forgiveness for 6 months now because that tolls that 120-month period. Or let's say that she wasn't working part-time, or she wasn't working full-time and she was only working part-time. That would also make her not eligible yet. So all of those things have to be happening simultaneously. So it's all about compliance with the statute in order to get it.
And is it just people who work in these public sector or teachers, or do you have to fall under the umbrella of some of those kind of giving back professions in order to qualify for that type of loan forgiveness?
Yes, but so you can be a secretary at a not-for-profit. As long as you're working there full-time, you'll qualify.
Okay.
Or you can be a janitor at a not-for-profit at a hospital, and you'll also qualify. So it's just a question of being employed full-time in the public sector and having the right type of loans there and also being in the right type of payment plan.
David,
how does the Family Leave Act come into play here? If you're a teacher and who had a baby, mm-hmm. or you're the husband of and your wife had a baby and you're now allowed to take off, is that considered the
yes.
Continuation, or does that stop until they go back full time?
No, that won't toll your that won't necessarily toll that 120-month period, because
great.
You'll be able to get your employer to sign the form saying that you're employed full time. It doesn't really matter if you're on leave, because you're still considered a full time employee.
All right.
So those months should also count towards public sector. It's just, again, like, there are a lot of little things you can do to mess it up.
There are.
Yeah.
But do you take money up front? Is that part of the deal, or do you take part of the end? How does it work in terms
of our fee?
Yes.
So what we do is we just charge a flat fee. And, you know, it's kind of funny, because we have clients who are, because of our services, they're going to end up saving a couple $100,000. We don't take our fee based on the amount that you're saving. We charge a flat fee because we have it down to a science. We know exactly what we're doing. And so we submit all the paperwork for you and make sure that you get that forgiveness, and we charge a flat fee, and it's very reasonable.
You know the law, and you're the ones to deal with. You're the reputable ones, and that's important, as we've learned. David Hochberg, we've got some questions coming in for you, too. You got me a 4.5% in March. Should I look to refi again? We've heard some interesting stuff from the feds that they don't plan to really be moving too much on these rates, so things are holding pretty steady at this low number.
I would tell this person this. I was just talking to my team on the way down here. We did a ton of cash out refinances all of last year because of the low rates. And the individuals that did cash out refinances, there's typically a rate adjustment because you're taking cash out of your house. Mm-hmm. If you're taking cash out of your house and you paid off your debt, which most of our listeners who called us did, and your credit score has gone up and you passed the 180-day mark since your loan closed, it's no longer considered a cash out refinance. After 180 days, miraculously, that's the demilitarized zone. It's considered a rate and term refinance. So should you take a look at it? Yes. And we're going to be calling all our borrowers that have crossed over the 180-day mark. I'll tell you another thing. If you're in an FHA loan, because you had some type of challenge that you couldn't get a Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac loan because mm-hmm. of your credit score or whatever, and you've worked diligently over the past 6, 8, 12 months in order to get your scores higher that would qualify for a Fannie Freddie loan, you should definitely give a lender a call. You know, if you want to call us, 855-56-DAVID, or call your local bank to see, or your local mortgage professional to see if you can get into a better loan opportunity at this time while rates are still low.
We want to break really quickly here. When we come back with David Hochberg and Ray Kaplan, we have many more questions. If you have your money questions, ask them, because they can save you a lot of money. They do it all the time. They do it every day. Mortgage rates are at historic lows. That's another thing. How do you act in this environment? Would you ever pay points to bring it down even farther? We're going to ask David about that. Ray's got some more advice for you. Coming up here on WGN Radio, live from the Skyline Studios, this is Anna DeVlantis. David Hochberg, Ray Kaplan are here answering your money questions. In this rate environment, David Hochberg, how do you advise people? Do you have any macro kind of ideas about what people should be doing? Should they be looking at refining? Should they pay for points to bring down their mortgage even more with these mortgage rates now at historic lows?
Yeah, there you go. I'm not a big fan of paying for points unless you're getting discount points from the seller when you're buying a home in order to entice you to buy the home. To pay that extra point, what's a point? Everybody's like, what the heck are they talking
about?
What
is a point?
It's 1% of your loan amount. So if you have I was just talking to a member of my team, $540,000 loan, a credit union was that we're competing with against this listener's loan, was saying, well, we could get you this rate with an origination point. And I'm like, oh, great. So now we're back to the discount point game. Here we go again. So What they do is charge you one percentage of your loan amount, and they quote you a lower rate. Well, when you start figuring out what that 1% factored into your loan, amortized over 30 years, as opposed to paying that 1% and taking a slightly higher rate, you're pretty much are going to be neck and neck. So why throw another 1% on your loan in order to get a lower rate? That's what lenders are doing right now, just drilling people with closing costs. I'm running ads right now. A WGN listener was quoted $15,000 from a national lender that's got rockets that loves to promote low rates. And I say we don't have a rocket program. I don't have to charge people $15,000 to pay for a national advertising campaign. But people get caught up in the smoke and the mirrors, right? Mm-hmm. When you have to look at what's actually they're quoting you. And when you break down the numbers, that's what we have to do for folks. Like, well, they're quoting me a quarter of a point less. I'm like, I'll charge you 15 G's more, and I'll get you half a point to almost a full point less. What they're doing is not really helping you, but you believe it because you believe in the national brand and all the advertisement. You pump gas, and they're there on the gas pump. So you got to be careful on what it is. What should people do?
Yeah,
pick up the phone and call a lender and say, hey, is it the right time? A reputable lender. It's just like Ray, right? Mm-hmm. Ray gets all of my student loan referrals. Forget about it.
I
had a guy this weekend on my show. He called and he's like, listen, I'm having some challenges in student loans. My wife and I want to buy a house. Wife just gave birth to a brand new baby boy. Everything's healthy. So how bad's your credit? Went after the show, pulled the credit. His credit shot. I just dropped off his credit report to Ray with his permission. She's going to give him a call. Wife has 800 credit scores. He's mid-600s. Long story short, wife qualifies to buy the home just in her name only, right? So we're going to drop him. We're going to load up the horse that's got the strongest back to get us over the hill. No pun intended, but I'm just saying.
There are ways around this stuff. You got to be with someone reputable who's going to work through the math for you.
Right.
It's a math problem.
Who's going to take a look at your actual situation and then try to analyze the situation right, so that you get the best deal for you and your family. Because you're right. Sometimes those slogans, it just doesn't work out that way for you. He probably thought that the house is going to be in his name. It turned out the best way to go is to put it in his wife's name.
It's going to drop him and just roll with her. Because if he was on it, he's like, well, I make all this money. I'm like, well, great. I'm happy for you. You make all this money, but your credit blows.
Credit sucks.
And you know, you're severely credit challenged, and you can't be on the loan if you want to buy this home. But your wife qualified, so forget about it. Don't worry about it.
You mentioned something, David. You send over when someone has a bad credit report to you. What can you do there, Ray? What is some advice you have for folks about trying to boost that so that they can buy something? Maybe they don't have a wife with an 800 score.
Right. Sometimes the way to go, well, what we look at is we look at first at their federal student loans. So in this particular situation, he has a lot of federal student loans. And what we're going to do is take a look and see if we can drop the payment and get it so that he has less money, less bleeding every month. So maybe we get him a lower monthly payment. And then that means he can make bigger payments on his credit card debt, pay down those credit cards much faster.
Mm-hmm. We own our own home, but I have a lot of credit card debt. Is it better to borrow against our home to pay them off? You hear this a lot, don't you, David?
Yeah.
It's a common question.
And that's a text we got this weekend that we didn't get a chance to talk about on the show. So the question is, the answer is, should you use your home's equity to pay off higher interest rate credit card debt? Absolutely.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
I'm not saying go out and borrow against your house and go to the boats and play blackjack and roulette and craps, okay? If you've got $100,000 worth of equity in your home and you got $40,000 worth of debt, which most of your listeners unfortunately have, and you could borrow $40,000 either through a cash-out refinance or through a home equity line of credit. Some people don't qualify for a home equity line of credit because their credit's so shot.
Right.
And you have to do a cash-out refinance. So why not take out the $40,000, pay off the debt, save thousands of dollars?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're talking about. And get yourself into a position to build an emergency fund, Ray, right? How many people you talk to don't have $500 in their savings account right now?
Oh, that's absolutely true. And sometimes you need to do something to kind of reset the table. My dad used to say, if you want to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs. You need to do something to stop that bleeding and to get at your situation under control. And that'll really help you save a lot of money in those interest payments every month. And then you're right. Then you can start saving some money. And, you know, it really helps kind of, or it's a reset, basically.
Right. I can see that. We have a question for you, Ray. 815, can you please explain the 120 months thing? You went into a lot of detail before, and I want to back up because I think that applies to a lot of people. I teach full-time. I'm in a public school, and I'm 2 years into paying off my 10-year student loan. Am I eligible, or am I too late to the party? 2 years too late to the party?
No, this person should be eligible. So the one of the requirements is that if you're going to get public sector loan forgiveness, you have to be in an income-driven payment plan for 120 months while employed full-time in the public sector. So after 8 more years, that person will get public sector loan forgiveness of all the interest that's accrued on their loan, which should be quite significant.
Mm-hmm. We want to get to this too, guys. Sorry to bounce around so much. There's so many topics to get to, but the Secure Act just passed Congress. The Secure Act, what is that? That's a retirement savings. It basically changes the game in some ways for retirement. David, can you tell people how this might affect them? I know part-timers are affected. I know there's a new age for when you can start withdrawing your money. All kinds of things fall under this.
Well, I'm going to defer the act to the attorney. But right. I will tell you what I heard was that you now don't have to take your required minimum distribution until you're 72 and a half years old, which is great for wealthy individuals or for your listeners that have money in the bank. They're not forced to take the money at 70 and a half years old. They have another 2 years to accrue interest and build wealth off of that. That's why we're doing a ton of reverse mortgages, so people can live tax-free off the equity in their home and extend those retirement savings out. And I'll kick what the law says to the attorney.
These things are always complicated. Counselor Ray, can you please tell us what we need to know about this, the Secure Act?
The Secure Act, I think the one downside to it, although in general it's being viewed very favorably, especially for employers, because it provides a tax incentive to enroll your employees in a 401k and to put them on auto deduct.
That you don't have to even tell them, they have to opt out of it. Isn't that part of what it says?
Correct. Yes. It just makes it a lot easier to get them all kind of in auto deductions. And before the Secure Act, I guess it was if a family member had an IRA and then that person passed away and left it to a beneficiary spouse, the spouse could continue to make withdrawals from that IRA over the course of their entire lifetime while still enjoying the tax-free growth in that account. Mm-hmm. The one downside is that now you have to withdraw that money within 10 years, so you no longer can withdraw it over 40 years or so while enjoying the growth in that account tax-free.
What is it? Do people come to you and just say, hey, look, I got to get my money together? Is there just one sort of golden rule, anything you can sort of just impart advice? Is it's a new year and people are making these financial goals themselves? If they don't have this really super specific thing and they sort of have this cloud over their head about my finances are not in a great shape or I want to save more money or, make things work better than they are now?
I would say one take-home message for me that I think a lot of people don't know is staying under that 30% of available credit on their credit cards. Not to spend over 30% of what your available credit limit is, even if that means balance transfers, getting them all under 30% of the available spend will really help your credit score.
That's helpful. No, David, you got something?
And I will tell you this. It's like you are doing the healthy eating, and so is your husband doing the healthy eating. You made the decision at the beginning, right? You're going to put the fork down, and you're not going to eat the bad stuff. You're going to eat more good stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what individuals have to do. Most of your listeners right now are loaded with between $10,000 and $40,000 worth of debt. Mm-hmm. It's a known fact. I run credit reports all week.
And that doesn't include mortgage debt.
That does not include mortgage debt. That's on top of the mortgage debt.
Credit cards, student loans, the rest of that.
Everything. Installment loans, car leases. I will tell you this. If you could take money out of your house, if you could pull equity out of your home, Ray, which is the same as cash, and you could apply that money to some other debt that's costing you more money, and you could free up $500 to $1,000. One guy we just helped in December free up $1,840 a month, which he's going to take that. We couldn't pay off all of his debt, believe it or not, but we're freeing up over $1,800. He's going to use that $1,800, which is gigantic. He's going to use that $1,800 a month to pay off the other 15 G's worth of debt that we couldn't cover, and within 6-7 months, he's going to get some bonuses or whatever. That's what his goal is, right? His goal is, I'm tired of looking at these credit card bills and stacking them up in order and looking at them every single month. And I talked to listeners, I'm like, wow, you have 20 credit cards, $40,000 worth of debt over 20 credit cards. That's got to be stressful. They're like, you have no idea.
Oh,
I've got a card table set up and I just go down. So when I get paid, I just chip it away.
Yes.
So make it a point to start your year off on the right foot. We'll give you a free consultation. Yeah. Costs nothing.
And I like the free consultation you just gave us just now. Ray Kaplan and David Hochberg, you guys are awesome. We always appreciate your advice, and you're saving a lot of people a lot of money. David Hochberg of Team Hochberg, Ray Kaplan of the Kaplan Law Firm. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks for having
us. Being here on Money Monday. See you soon. We are back with more here on WGN Radio, including a very familiar voice here on WGN. You'll recognize her voice. You'll love hearing from her. She'll be here in a moment. This is Skyline Studio. It's 2:31, and she is a familiar face. She's a familiar voice here on WGN. We welcome Andrea Darlis. Good
hey,
to see you.
Anna.
The Walk of Famer.
Hey, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. You're now over Senior Director of Alumni Engagement at the University of Illinois.
Yes.
U of I alum, and happily doing so. You're doing some great stuff. I know you, every time I turn around, you're working with the governor, you're working with all these officials, you're doing amazing work.
It we're excited. There's a lot going on, especially in 2020, and I know you, I know the investigative reporter that you always are, you're like, what's going on with the 78, and you know,
I'm always going to say, what's happening over there?
What's happening? You know, that's a great question. So we were very excited that one of the top 10 stories in the Chicago Tribune toward the end of the year, it's always at the end of the year, it's like, look ahead for 2020, what's mm-hmm. coming up? And the 78, which is the development that's going to be called the Discovery Partners Institute, it's being built in the South Loop at Roosevelt and Canal, and we are going to, fingers crossed, be digging ground for that sometime this spring. So we're looking forward to
and
that.
And that's exciting stuff because it's what a technology center. It's hoping
yes.
that they're going to keep technology, engineering, talent, those STEM careers.
Yes.
Homegrown people will get to stay here. They won't have to move to the coast in order to be employed or to get educated. It's all right here. This center that could be a really big deal for the future of the city and beyond the region.
It absolutely is. It's a partnership between the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana and the University of Chicago, but we're also now partnering with Northern Illinois University and the University of Tel Aviv in Israel. Mm-hmm. So we're going to try and keep all of those jobs and this education of all these young alums right here in Chicago. And it's going to be great for the city. Mayor Lightfoot has signed on to the partnership. Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, Alderman Lopez, Alderman Dowell, because it's going to be so big, Anna. It's going to be kind of the South Riverwalk, too.
Land, isn't it?
Yeah, it's huge.
Currently,
it's
kind
huge.
Of stuff that doesn't look all that good. It's kind of blighted along the river, and
yes.
there's some barbed wire and then some fences. And so it's really going to be a rejuvenation.
Yes.
It's easy for me to say.
Yeah, no,
kind
no.
of story as well for several of the neighborhoods there that border along the river.
It's true. It's like what was done to the Riverwalk right here, you know, on our view along Wacker, mm-hmm. is going to be exactly that, only more, with restaurants and pedways and walkways and a technology hub and all kinds of great things.
I gotta tell you, we're natives. I mean, would you ever believe, even 10 years ago, but certainly 15 years ago, if they said, hey, that river down there, the one that, you know, the Chicago River.
I know.
You're going to be hanging out there. You're going to be kayaking.
Yes.
You're going to be boating with your kids. You're going to be out there, like, dining and having a glass of wine or a brewski right there, sitting along and just and passing the evening in the summertime. I mean, you wouldn't have believed it.
No, never. In fact, I used to, when I lived in the South Loop, I would bike along and I'd stop at the river and then go back. Well, now you can just continue on because it's not only the bike path, but as you said, there's all these great restaurants along there. And do you remember, I think Mary Vandeveld and I think you were a part of this too. We did a kayaking
Probably.
Along the river.
Yes.
And we said, and at that time, this is, you know, 10 plus years ago, how are you going to kayak on the river? You know, and
doesn't it smell
it
down there?
And
why would you
just
go down there?
Yeah, there's wetlands now and it's revitalized and, you know, it's all part of just what makes our city so great.
And they keep connecting it, which is the 78 is another piece of that, because as they keep moving it, you know, it just all starts to become this web of interconnectivity along the river.
Right.
Which is great for all the neighborhoods.
Yep.
So I'm a big supporter of that, and so I'm happy we were able to talk about that.
Yeah, me too.
So tuition increases for Illinois colleges in 2020. Big story about that, but
yes.
You've got some good news.
Yes, we do have some good news. Tuition increases for Illinois colleges in 2020 for in-state freshmen. It hasn't changed in 5 years at the U of I, and trustees are going to be voting next week on whether to continue that freeze. Actually, it's on Thursday they're going to be voting, and so far they're not saying what they're proposing, but system-wide income from undergraduate tuition has just continued to grow in the entire state of Illinois over the past 5 years. But as you're seeing a trend, a lot of schools, including Illinois, have frozen that tuition. There's also an interesting part of this too, Anna, and you and I were talking about this mm-hmm. off the air before, is that it's easier than ever to go to college in the state of Illinois. Pick Northern, Southern, Eastern, Western. They've just now instituted a program where if you qualify, if you're in the top 10% of your class, especially here in Chicago Public Schools, you will be granted admission to those schools.
How about that?
Yeah, and then University of Illinois has the Illinois Commitment Program, which for families making less than $61,000 a year students that get in will get 4 years free tuition.
It's so refreshing to, well, the free tuition sounds great.
Yeah. Oh,
but
yeah.
Even the freeze is very, it's good to hear, because you think about, you start hearing how wages are not rising anywhere near the degree of tuition costs over
right.
the years, and how families keep up with it, or how does anybody who's paying for their own college keep up with that rising cost of college. You start to see a whole new generation, Generation Z, wondering, questioning, do I really need to go to college? And they're a kid who might really benefit from going to college, and might that education might really help them, and yet the cost, the rising cost, and seeing the crushing debt that millennials are carrying and Generation Xers
yes.
are carrying, it starts to become a, gee, do I really need to do this?
You hit the nail on the head. It becomes a problem. You know, we don't want any of our children or any of our students or anybody, especially Chicago or the state of Illinois, to think, oh, you know what, I can't afford it, and to have that sticker shock. So what's very cool is there was an interesting stat that came out of the University of Illinois last year, is that 25% of the students, the incoming freshman class there, were the first in their generation to go to college.
25.
Yeah.
Remarkable. That's
I know.
Really, really cool
yeah.
to hear.
And we think of, you know, we think that we were the first student.
Right.
But you're right.
My
now
parents
the,
didn't go to college.
Yeah. My dad went to a couple of years, and my mom did a few years at DePaul.
Mm.
So, yeah.
That is so cool.
Very interesting.
All right, another U of I grad in the news, and everyone's aware of this, is James Holzhauer from Jeopardy.
Are you watching this?
I'm watching some of it. I'm following it.
I got so addicted to this last week, you know, watching the Tournament of Champions. And I'm not someone who watches Jeopardy regularly, but I got so hooked
now
on it.
Now you are.
Yeah.
Here's a little taste of it. Let's hear.
Geography 400. Lambeau knows this 118-mile-long inlet that receives the waters of the Fox River. James.
What is Green Bay?
Yeah.
Ooh. Audible 4.
Boo.
I know.
He got the boo in there.
He got the boo in there.
I like him even more.
I know. And then, meanwhile, you have the Kim Gordons of the world posting their Green Bay Packers
yeah.
selfies on Insta. You know it.
Hey, did you see, Kim, on the Packer notes, did you
yeah.
see Anthony Davis, the charter school, like stud from the NBA? He's now in L.A. He came up through Chicago system. He's a Packer fan.
He's a smart guy.
He was on social media in his full Packer jersey. You know, like, hey, Pack Nation, this is, we're going to get
thing.
This one. But he's from Chicago.
Smart guy. Hey, where's her microphone?
How did that happen?
Don't you control
I know.
That?
She's winning in the pool, too, because we have this in her office pool thing, and she's
I
all
I doubled
all
down,
in.
Too, on
I
my
saw.
Bet.
Oh. I saw. You doubled down on the Packers.
Yeah, I mean.
That worked out nicely for you.
So far. We'll see how next week goes, but so far it's working for me. Oh, God.
Downers Grove student. This is interesting. We want to talk about this, too.
Oh, yeah,
it's
you're
a bit of a turn.
On, I think, right?
Yes. We're going to have him on the show this week.
Yeah.
But it's a fascinating thing that she's created.
This, to me, and again, you and I talked about this last week when we were talking about, you know, collegiate-type stories that we want to talk about on your show. This, to me, I read this story and I was amazed. I'm just amazed at so many, at the young minds out there now. And this young girl thought to create this. She was a senior at Downers Grove South, has created a sexual assault database for colleges in Illinois. So all Illinois college and universities. It's called Project Dandelion. She's a senior, so she's applying to different colleges. And among her biggest concerns, and I think this is a huge problem now, especially for women in this day and age, juniors and seniors in high school, they're worried about going to these big colleges, and they're worried about their safety. So she created this database as part of her work as a Girl Scout. And what it is, Anna, it's an online resource for students that organize all kinds of information on college sexual assaults or sexual assaults on college campuses in order to make students better prepared and more aware.
So is it data and locations of where things are happening, times in maybe police reports?
Yes.
Are there things like that?
Exactly. You know how we have, and it's unfortunate, but it is the time that we live in, you can go online, say City of Chicago, and punch in your neighborhood and your zip code, and you can see, you know, either the registered criminal sex offenders, you know, you mm-hmm. want to check for your children, obviously,
mm-hmm.
and where they're registered, and how much crime occurs in a certain area. This is that specifically for all colleges in Illinois and universities and where they're occurring.
That's it's a U of I grad.
Yeah.
Downers Grove student.
Downers Grove student.
Wow,
yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I look forward to having him on the show to understand a little more about it and how she came up with the idea as part of a Girl Scout project.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Also, you've got a financial aid story.
Oh, yeah, this is a really good one, too. So across the state of Illinois, there's an education grant program that's designed to provide financial aid to undocumented students and transgender students. Now, we know undocumented students and transgender students may not be able to qualify for federal education assistance, but now they have other options to get state funding. And this is all part of the RISE Act, which Governor Pritzker signed into law last summer. So to be eligible, students have to meet requirements under the RISE Act. They have to prove residency and a few other requirements specific to the state aid programs. But Illinois is one of the first the state of Illinois is one of the first to institute financial aid now for undocumented and transgender students.
I want to ask you a lot of movement under this governor. There is. I want to ask you, though, as we head to a break here in a moment, just because will you stick around for trending?
Yes, Kathis, I'd love to, sure.
Got a couple things we got to talk about there. But how are you enjoying being at the University of Illinois and this new role for you now that you've dug in a little while and you've been doing it?
I do. I love it. There's some great things planned. We have some very big announcements that'll be coming up. Actually, one next week to do with the Chicago Aviation Department. And then one in February dealing with Chicago Public Schools. So
I hope you'll come on the show.
Oh, I promise.
Make sure you let us know all about them.
Promise.
Andrea Darlis, she's going to stick around for a little bit here as we do trending topics. What's trending in the Chicago area? Coming up here on WGN Radio. Walk of Famer Andrea Darlis is here. She's going to stick around for trending topics. Steve Bertrand is in the studio. Lauren Lapka is in the studio. That in a moment. Riverside Healthcare puts well within reach. Riverside provides expert care in 5 counties. And Watson Health has named Riverside a 100 top hospital 10 times. Featuring some of the state's most advanced technology, Riverside serves communities just south of the south suburbs with innovative programs in heart, brain, spine, and orthopedics and cancer care. Riverside also offers access to a network of primary care and immediate care locations, including in Frankfort. Download the Riverside app for locations and wait times. Learn more at riversidehealthcare.org. Riversidehealthcare.org is the place to go. Riverside Healthcare, putting well within reach. All right, guys, you ready for this? Some interesting news, trending. We got a lot to get to here. Ever not get exactly what you thought when you ordered from Amazon? Well, this couple in this family said that they received used diapers. Used.
Oh.
Ew. Yeah, from Amazon's delivery service.
Were they unusable or?
They were used. Like there was fecal matter in the diapers that they got sent from Amazon. They thought they were getting regular diapers. I think they have twins, so they were ordering a lot of diapers.
Well, I'm glad I didn't mention my problem. I have a weird problem where I order two of everything, so imagine
by accident?
Double the dirty diapers. Oh, good grief.
That's awful.
Isn't it? It's terrible.
What's even grosser is that what someone would have to have sent that back to Amazon, and there was confusion?
Yeah, who's right? dealing with the packaging there?
Yeah. How do you even make that call?
I ordered supplements once, and they came, you know, the box with the little capsules in the foil.
Yeah.
Thing you punch out.
Yeah.
And someone had opened the box and taken out a couple of envelopes of the foil.
Ooh, I wouldn't trust that.
From Amazon. They were gone. I mean,
they were gone.
Like, say it was supposed to be 48 capsules, there were 32. In the box.
I ordered 10 of a product and I got one. That was a problem, but I eventually got that sorted out. All right, Garrett Popcorn is selling $1 bags to celebrate National Popcorn Week. So you head in there. It starts today, by the way.
I'm sure there won't be a line at all.
Never a line at Garrett's, especially when there's $1 small bags of any signature recipe, including the original Chicago-style Garrett mix.
How small? I mean, is it the actual small or are they minis?
The small, if they're looking at the normal smalls, because I get those, they're pretty good for one person.
Yeah.
I would say I'm not hungry after that. Between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. to get the bargain.
Oh,
okay.
Time
whole line is going to probably take 2 hours.
Plan your lunch hour accordingly.
Yeah.
Like,
no
and eat your whole lunch in line.
It's longer
maybe
than at the dispensaries.
Seriously.
Oh, my God, right?
Garrett's, you might go to the dispensary first and then it's being convenient over there.
They should build a Garrett's right next to the dispensaries.
Can you imagine? Mm-hmm. That would be brutal. Celebrating its 70th anniversary in September last year. So they're 70 years old and that's what they're doing. All right. Did you guys see this? This is a great one from Family Feud Canada. A contestant was up for $10,000 when she was asked this question. See how she did.
Name Popeye's favorite food.
Chicken.
She went chicken.
Chicken.
Oh, no chicken. Popeye. Popeye's favorite food is spinach, but she was in the moment.
That
she
was
seems
beautiful.
So sure.
Oh, you know, they should capitalize on that. Popeye should make her a spokeswoman.
They, you know, what's funny? You said that Popeye's on Friday offered her $10,000 worth of Popeye's chicken and other items on the menu.
Oh, hey.
There you go.
It's a party to
see,
end all
parties.
See,
that's the marketing mind of yours, Andrea. They're on it. That's what they did. She just, our survey says you got that right. DM us and claim your $10,000 worth of Popeyes. Love that chicken from Popeyes, the food chain tweeted.
Oh, that's awesome.
Not missing a moment to get their name in there and market that. That was pretty cool. This we were talking about with Kim Gordon earlier. Anthony Davis, he was at Lambeau over the weekend. Anthony Davis, he's a stud, right, in the NBA?
Mm-hmm.
He's with the Lakers.
Aren't you always just slightly a little depressed when you know a Chicago native is a Packers fan?
Yeah, I'm like, how did that happen? Like, what went wrong in his life that he's out at Lambeau with the Pack Nation? But he was, and he was very proud to be. I don't know, maybe he knows Aaron Rodgers or something. I don't know. But he's a Chicagoan, and he turned Packer fan. And he was in his full Packer gear, too, on the field.
Well, another way to put that is he was watching a football game in January.
Yeah.
And as a Bear fan, you don't really get a chance to do that.
Oh, so. There you go.
You're kind of out if you're a Bear. But if he's obviously not a Bears fan, because you don't put on the Packer jersey and go to Lambeau, he's a Packer fan. But
because he likes January football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's
I still would never
reality,
put a Packer jersey on.
Yeah, no, I could never.
No.
No. Mm-mm. Even in January.
Uh-uh.
Danica Patrick did. She did.
Yeah, she's also a traitor, right? Because she said she was originally a Bears fan.
She was, even though I think she was born in Wisconsin, but she's...
I think she lived in Joliet, though, didn't she?
Well, didn't she date Aaron Rodgers? Who did she date?
She's with
him
now. They just bought some swanky Malibu estate.
Mansion, yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Wait, she's dating Aaron Rodgers?
Andrew, where have you been?
I'm so behind on the times.
You're just in this academic world. You're not reading your Us magazine.
You've got to get back to my gossip, my People magazine.
You're not in your ivory tower.
Okay, well, if you don't know about this then, Andrea, because a Japanese billionaire is seeking a girlfriend to fly to the moon with him.
See, I wouldn't even go to space, period.
Most guys want to send their girlfriends alone.
Yeah, right.
It's after you're dating for a while. He's going to find someone first, and then he wants to be, why not be the first woman to travel to the moon? The deadline to apply is January 17th. It's a pitch on his Twitter account.
This is so sketchy.
Yeah.
I feel very bad
for men that try to pitch these kind of things in lieu of a relationship, a real relationship, I should say.
Oof. He's accepting applications from single women age 20 and older who will want to enjoy life to the fullest. It is the matchmaking exercise that, being turned into a TV show for a web streaming service.
Okay. Could you just use him to go to the moon? I mean, do you have to
talk about a bad date, though? What if you don't like him within the first minute?
Doesn't I know, you
take,
can't
like,
leave.
A little while.
You can't be like, oh, I have a call. Sorry,
some
gotta
close
go.
Quarters to be stuck in.
Yeah. My mom's calling. I got to leave. No, you can't get out of that. But here it is. He's scheduled to make a lunar trip in 2023 or later as the first private passenger on a voyage. Oh, and it's Elon Musk who's behind it all, the SpaceX whole thing.
I'd go to the moon with him.
Elon
really?
Musk? Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
It'd be great conversation.
I don't know.
For like a minute. He's a very successful entrepreneur, but it feels as if he's does a lot of strange things, doesn't he?
He's known for
being, you know, just a very bizarre individual.
Mm-hmm.
Pope Francis hinting that Catholic priests should be allowed to get married. This is a big issue right now facing the Catholic Church. He's saying there is a shortage of Catholic priests in certain areas all around the globe, and so he's suggesting that this may be something the Catholic Church should consider. He's actually warning some leaders in the Catholic Church about becoming bureaucrats, not shepherds, urging them to have the courage of rekindling what he called the fire of God's gift by being open to change.
Aren't they kind of the only ones that don't marry?
A lot of other denominations under Christianity do. I know the Greek Orthodox priests do.
So I think they are the only ones, aren't they?
That's what I thought I heard.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
The Greeks, the Orthodox is what they can get married before they're ordained,
right?
So once you're ordained.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if you're married, then ordained, that's okay.
So, but you know, the thing is, retired Pope Benedict is kind of coming out against it, which is contrary. He was supposed to quit and go away and not comment on these things. So we might have a Pope Cage match going
on. Oh, has anyone seen the two popes, by the way?
Yeah,
on
we
Netflix?
Saw it. Yeah, we watched it.
Did you like it?
It's pretty good. Yeah.
It's nominated. Okay. Did he get nominated today?
We saw Anthony,
that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's so great.
So, you're right. Retired Pope Benedict is calling for celibacy to be the rule, and that he's making strong arguments. In fact, he wrote a book with a fellow Cardinal Robert Serra, saying, don't change this, we don't need to, and pushing way back at the Pope.
Ooh.
So some problems there. Chicago Restaurant Week. Do you guys ever take advantage of Chicago Restaurant Week?
Oh, yeah.
Try
Love
to.
That.
I like it because this is in January, and the restaurants are typically not that full. It's a couple weeks away, January 24th through February 9th. More than 400 restaurants participating this year. So they do like those deals, right? They have
like the prefix. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like for lunch mm-hmm. and dinner.
I was at a restaurant this weekend, and they had their Chicago Restaurant Week menu out.
Already?
So, you know,
take a look at it.
And I'm like, what the hell is this? I'm trying to order it. It's not available. But I guess now I get it. They're probably advertising wanting people to come back during that.
During the restaurant week, yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool thing because it usually is
Popeyes.
A good deal. What's his favorite food again?
Chicken,
not spinach, chicken. All right, 2020 breaks records, sees 62 female nominees for Oscars. They were out today. You heard Dean this morning on the Bob Surratt Show, and it's one of the records broken with the 2020 Oscar nominations.
That's an interesting twist because really women got shut out of director.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Only categories. One woman of color was in the lead category.
Right.
For Harriet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, was excellent.
19 of the 20, I think, acting nominations went to white people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Harriet
sounds right.
Was the only.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that may be the sort of spin on the whole thing.
Yeah, that's
that
a really positive spin.
It's a very positive. Right. That's from ABC7 Chicago. So that's where we found that.
I guess, but that's okay too, because it's, whether it's editor or cinematographer or whatever, it's important there as well.
Right.
So it's good.
Absolutely.
The biggest night in Hollywood.
They had all the best actress nominations were women.
Yes.
Okay.
The actress nominations. Yeah, I noticed that. The biggest night in Hollywood goes hostless for the second year in a row and will focus on big musical numbers, comedy, and star power. I kind of like the host.
I do too.
I kind of like the host.
I always like it. And I was thrilled that Tina Fey and Amy Poehler are going to be Golden Globe hosts next
year. Yeah, they were really good before.
Yeah.
They were excellent. Yeah, they're going to be 2021 Golden Globes hosts. The Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, my two favorites, they're back again.
They're awesome.
Aren't they?
So funny.
What a duo. So they're going to be back for the Golden Globes next year. So it's a little while to wait for it, but that was the announcement that came out.
Who was the last host of the Oscars?
I'm trying to think.
I think that was Seth MacFarlane, or
really?
At least he was one of the last, because...
And then they went hostless.
Right.
Well, they had to last year.
Yeah, with the whole
Kevin
thing
Hart.
With Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
But because more and more people are just getting criticized for either things they've said in the past or how they do as a host.
Right.
I wouldn't want to
Or they start digging into their Twitter file,
exactly,
and they say, wait a minute, back here in 2011, you said, you're disqualified.
Remember James Franco and Anne Hathaway?
Mm-hmm. Terrible.
Well,
I didn't like that. I didn't like that.
Okay, but even if you didn't like it, it's like it almost hurt their career. People are so... it's mean to them, and it's a no-win situation.
Right?
Oh, I like both of them separately.
Rob Lowe and Snow
like
White. That's all you have to...
Finally, guys, here, the NFL.
David Niven and the Streaker.
We got to get to this. 49ers are keeping their French bulldog around. The one-year-old Zoe is the emotional support animal, and he certainly helped. He or she, Zoe, she, I guess, helped this weekend because they did well.
Yeah.
So go ahead and make fun of it.
I'm all for it. Every workplace should have an emotional support animal.
Absolutely.
Wink, wink.
What I think is funny is to see these big, tough NFLers say, I spend some time with Zoe, and we really de-stressing, and
seriously,
it's a really great thing for the team.
Just don't give Zoe to the Packers.
Yeah, no.
Aaron Rodgers.
They can have a deprive him of that.
Cheese or something.
Right, exactly.
That's going to do it for Trending Topics. The news is coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.